This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. If you can't seem to get away from the news, and also you really care about the news, and also you really need a break from the news, well, my next guest, as he says, is here for it. Comedian R. Eric Thomas is a senior staff writer at L.com. He's the star of Eric Reads the News for L.com, and he's also author of a new memoir, a collection of essays called Here for It, or How to Save Your Soul in America, which came out last month. He joins us from his home in Baltimore, Maryland. Eric, great to have you.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
I'm all right.
That is exactly the response. Yeah, it's, you know, it's such an automatic thing to say, how are you? And then every person I've spoken to over the last couple of weeks has been like, well, ... I have to say, I've learned so much today about manufacturing. This process of like retrofitting factories is so fascinating
right?
to me. I it seems like magic, but then I realize, you know, I do the same thing in my own house. Like when I order an exercise bike and then I retrofit it to turn it into a clothes rack. so, you know, I'm helping the American experience along here too.
So the clothes are hanging well on the exercise bike. Have you swept them off of there and gotten some exercise during isolation? How you doing?
Yeah, you know, I have attempted. So I was watching. There's so many Instagram lives where people, you know, different fitness influencers or teachers are running classes, which is great, and I love it. I was watching this one, or I got ready to watch this one, and the guy said, all you need is a towel, a bottle of water, and a staircase. And I was sitting in my living room, and I was like, okay, well, I don't have a staircase. So I just watched the video like it was a movie by M.C. Escher. Like, I was just like, well, look at this guy going up and down stairs. This is fascinating. So I feel more in tune with my body, but that's mostly because I've not seen any other bodies.
you know, they do say we have been warned by the public health psychology experts. I mean, this is true. The more you sit around the living room, the more you become hyper-tuned to what's going on inside. Every little sniffle's going to feel bad, or every little ache's going to feel weird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is literally my experience of life 24/7. I've worked from home for years, and so I'm constantly, I hear a little crack in a muscle. I'm like, oh, it's over. This is it. I guess on the other hand, it's kind of like mindfulness. You're very sort of aware of the movement of your cells through your, I don't know. I didn't pay attention in physiology, so I don't even know if I have cells. But whatever is going on in there, it seems to be going okay. So good luck to everybody inside my body.
Well, what have you been eating? How are you doing with food?
What have I been eating?
Yeah.
Who are you?
My
therapist?
Well, it's just because everybody's eating weird, you know? I think.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I haven't been cooking a lot. Here in Baltimore, we're not yet on shelter in place. And so there's a lot of local restaurants that we like that we have been ordering contactless takeout from because we want to support them. There's a great Indian place, a lot of pasta. But one thing that's so fascinating to me, everyone is baking bread. Like, everyone just has yeast in their house.
Yeah.
And this is very fascinating to me. I have not baked a single... I watched a video on baking bread yesterday. I was like, well, I guess let me figure this out. You know, I got to learn how to make a loaf of a sourdough starter, whatever that is. And I haven't yet figured out, what I need beyond like yeast and flour. So maybe that's today's project. Yeah, I don't leave the house.
There is something about bread. The flour and the yeast in my local grocery store, gone. I mean, that whole section weirdly is empty.
Oh,
everybody's
wow.
on bread.
What is it with bread? Here's the thing. Every other time, unless it's a blizzard or some catastrophe like is happening right now, everyone's like, no carbs, carbs are bad, don't eat bread, blah, 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 you know, a bowl, please. And now everyone's like, give me unlimited salad and breadsticks in my own home.
People are headed for bread.
I love it.
All right, we're going to talk to Eric Thomas more. We're going to talk about his book, his memoir. We're going to talk about his writing. Maybe he's doing some more writing stuck there in his place in Baltimore. Our Eric Thomas is here for it. More from him and from you in just one moment. I'm Todd Zwillick.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Home Instead Senior Care. Bonnie, a Home Instead caregiver, knows that building trust is essential to forging strong relationships with her Home Instead clients.
I seen the ad in the paper and I called, and 3 days after I was hired, I was with my very first client. You've got to have patience in order to be a good caregiver. You've got to build up the trust. I just love it. I couldn't ask for a better job or a better client.
To learn more or to search for available senior care job opportunities with Home Instead Senior Care, visit homeinstead.com.
When the economy goes haywire and you need a podcast to turn to, Planet Money is here for you.
Are we already in a recession?
There's no question that we are about to enter a period of substantial slowdown in the economy.
Listen to NPR's Planet Money, emergency podcasts whenever the news demands it.
Back now to my conversation with comedian R. Eric Thomas. He's the author of a new memoir called Here For It, or How to Save Your Soul in America. All right, Eric, enough shooting it about how much bread you're eating in the apartment. Let's get down to business here. your column for Elle.com is called Eric Reads the News. You write a lot of humorous takes on current events, but I'm guessing it's a little bit difficult to find humor in a pandemic. What are you writing? What are you thinking about now as you sit down to write?
Yeah, I started writing my column right before the 2016 election. And so, you know, we've all experienced different periods of elation or national despondence. But this is, you know, this is uncharted territory. So I am writing, I've pivoted my column a little bit. Like I've written like tips for working from home most chaotically, which I think are very helpful. You know, like never get dressed at all. Or if you do get dressed, like wear your prom dress or wear your wedding dress. Like never mute yourself on a Zoom call. I don't care what's happening in your house. Keep that sound 100. Things like that, you know. But mostly what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks is we're doing a new feature called Remote Rewind, where I'm watching different genres of movies, classic movies, and writing about them with the lens of our current situation, our current period of isolation and quarantine and anxiety. So I watched rom-coms last week, and a lot of rom-coms are about feeling lonely, feeling isolated, and trying to make connections. And this week I'm watching musicals. And in a musical, when a character can't say the things they want to say, they sing them. And that's, I think, a really great lens to also look at the way that we are communicating with each other or feeling, you know, sort of at a loss for words right now.
So many of us are connecting on social media, especially. There's a lot of music, but just a lot of attempts to share laughs and that kind of connection out there too, people singing out in their own way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's, social media is so fascinating because it allows us to reach people we would never reach, but it can also be really isolating and make us, you know, and you know, there's a limit to how much a screen can make you feel like you're part of the world. So it's really been heartening to see the ways, sort of old-fashioned ways that people are connecting and the new-fashioned ways. For instance, you know, my husband, and I write about my husband a little bit in my book, he's a pastor, and so the church is not meeting until much after Easter. You know, no matter what the president says, it's not safe to have Easter service. And so, but the church is on a hillside, and so my husband bought a FM transmitter for Easter service, and they're going to have drive-in church, like an old-school movie theater, and everybody stays in their cars and tunes into the same station, and my husband will be up on the hill preaching, and you know, I've been writing cue cards for the lyrics to the hymns to show on the Zoom broadcast, and it all feels very sort of low-tech, but also new-tech, high-tech, new ways of trying to be a person in the world.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Keeping that connection. And I love it doing it through FM radio, too. That warms my heart. That's fantastic. So can you...
He's brilliant. It's great.
I want you to tell this one story. Or can you tell the story of how you first got a job writing funny takes for Elle? Because this is not what you were doing for a living when you started doing this.
No. It's really wild. It's one of those stories that, like, you know, it's incredible, and it's exactly the way the internet works, but it's also sort of like when people ask me to come in and talk to their college classes with career advice, I'm like, yo, baby, I don't know. Things just sort of happened in a magical way. I was working as a program director for an LGBT community center in Philadelphia, and I used Facebook, like a lot of people use Facebook, to write about funny things that I saw or funny things that happened in my day. And I had, you know, maybe 2,000 friends on there, most of whom I knew. And one Saturday, I saw a picture of Justin Trudeau, President Barack Obama, and the Enrique Peña Nieto, the former president of Mexico. And they were striding down this red carpet in Canada. And it was framed so beautifully, and they were all wearing these bespoke suits and smiling, and it looked like the all male cast of Sex and the City, or like the Avengers as costumed by Tom Ford, and it was like a gorgeous photo. And so I wrote about it on Facebook, just, you know, this long sort of rambling post about how good they looked. And it went really, really viral. Like, it was like something like 70,000 shares and, or 70,000 likes and 16,000 shares. And one of those likes was the site director of Elle.com, a woman named Leah Chernikov, who sent me a Facebook message, and she was like, do you want to do this every day? And I was like, thirst after a sitting president? And she's like, well, yeah, maybe that, but also maybe, you know, write funny takes on the news. And I was like, yeah, sure. I don't think that's a job, but if you say so, I'll fill out a W-2 or W-9, whatever it is. Yeah.
I don't know what your status is over there. Are you full-time? Or
So now I'm full-time. Before I was, I was like, they brought me on as like a stringer, as a, and I was just like a freelancer, and I would write these columns every day. And people really glommed onto them very early, and things started going viral. And suddenly what started off as like a random Facebook post that I wrote like from my bed on a Saturday morning became the thing that I was doing every day. And by February of that year, by the next month was the Democratic National Convention, and one of my articles for that went really viral. It sort of solidified, like, oh, this is a thing that people are interested in. People are interested, you know, I feel like it's like a late night monologue. But like with sometimes a little bit more of an arch take, you know, some late night hosts, you know, are, well, they're not me, you know, like, you know, there's no black gay late night host.
Nope.
So it's like, well, this is just me, my version of doing late night television.
It's just amazing that you fired this off to friends and then it just turned into a thing. I mean, we all fantasize about being discovered. I mean, you talk about old movies, there's the fantasy of, you know, having the best voice or the best dance in your community theater and getting discovered by the Hollywood producer who happened to have his car broken down in town. Totally unrealistic. It's a high-tech version of what happened to you.
Yeah, I'm totally, who was eating ice cream in the window and got discovered, like Lana Turner or someone like that.
Yeah.
Like, it feels, who knows? Someone's on the internet's going to be like, you got all the details wrong. I'll be like, well, I don't know, honey. I'm just a moron sitting in my house. But no, it is exactly that. It is the thing that, you know, we dream of. And it's at that point in my career, you know, I had stopped sort of having these kind of dreams, you know, and that's the kind of thing I write about in the book a lot. Like, it seems there are a lot of times where it seems foolhardy to think that you will get the thing that you want, particularly if you're somebody who's trying to have a creative career. But I think there's a lot of places, a lot of lives in America that are put into a category of less than, where you're not going to get the thing that you dreamed of because of who you are, because of where you live, because of how much money you make, and no one's ever going to see the thing that you're trying to put out there. So I feel really, really fortunate. But it also feels, you know, the subtitle of the book, How to Save Your Soul in America, I feel really strongly that, like, no. It's, you know, I go back and forth in this current moment, but I do feel very strongly that, like, on its best day, America can be a space of such immense potential and possibility for every single person in it. And the thing that we have to avoid, you know, that we have to, like, circumvent are the systemic forces that are trying to keep us from our possibility. Hmm.
You write a lot about that in your book. You write about the experience growing up in Baltimore. You write about your parents sending you off to school in the rich suburbs, right? A little bit about that experience and how you think it shaped you as a writer or a comic or just Eric.
Well, you know, like, so I grew up in downtown Baltimore. If you've ever seen the television show The Wire, you've gotten a glimpse of my parents' house. The optics, as it were, weren't great, but the inside of the house was a space of endless possibility, and we were taught that we could be and do anything that we wanted to, even though, you know, there were sirens constantly all around us, and the flash of the police helicopter would illuminate the window every once in a while as it flew by, and so they saved my parents saved and scrimped a lot to get us. Another option. And so they sent us to private school, 18 minutes up 83. And I went to a private school called the Park School, and it has like 90 acres of woods, and there were horses that you could ride for gym class. And I was like, a horse for gym class? Oh, like I feel like Outlander. And it totally changed my perspective. And it was so disorienting because I did feel like an other for so much of my time there. But I also felt like I didn't not belong. It was just a matter of, I had to see myself as part of that environment. The environment was saying, you are welcome here. You are worthy of being here.
So many of the essays in your book sort of center around that theme of sometimes being an other, also being a part of it, both of those things together. I'm talking to R. Eric Thomas, author of Here For It, or How to Save Your Soul in America. You're listening to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick.
Right now, every household in the country is being asked to fill out the U.S. Census. It's the form that helps us determine how voting districts are redrawn, where to build public schools and hospitals, how to spend federal money. So why are some people afraid to fill it out? We're getting into all that this week on NPR's Code Switch podcast.
So, kid from downtown Baltimore goes to fancy school in the suburbs where you can ride horses for gym class. And church was a big part of your life, too, back at home.
Yeah. We grew up grew up Baptist, and we went to like a small one-room church, where they handed out church fans, and the ushers wore white orthopedic shoes, and it was a really, I really loved the environment, but as I grew older and started to sort of pick apart what was happening, I realized that, like, it was a space where a lot of identities weren't affirmed. You know, there weren't women in leadership, as the 90s came around, like, it became really sort of an area of deep concern for the church that that LGBTQ people weren't allowed in the church, and it was very clear about, they were very clear about that. And as I came into myself, I was like, I don't feel like, you know, I'm just a 13-year-old, so call me crazy, but this doesn't seem like justice to me. So it took a long time for me to figure out where I could both, like, fill my soul, feel my spirit, and also feel like I could bring all of my personhood into the church. And I didn't, you know, it's funny, like, if I were writing, if this were fiction and ending my story with, like, So he searched and searched for months, or years rather, and then he ended up marrying a Presbyterian pastor. I feel like I'd be like, that's too on the nose. Let's pull it back a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe like a good-hearted missionary or something. but that's just how it worked out.
Well, it did work out. Your husband is a pastor, as you said. He's doing Easter service on the top of the hill with the aid of cue cards and FM radio. We're going to go in just a minute, Eric. I do have to ask you before we do, just real quick, your career doing these takes and doing comedy started right before the last presidential election. How you feeling about this one? How you feeling about Joe Biden? How you feeling about Donald Trump? I don't know if they're in those bespoke suits framed perfectly like the other guys.
Oh, Lord, Todd, this is the darkest timeline, isn't it? I feel great, you know, because I don't have any other option. I've had too many cups of coffee today, and I haven't left my house in a fortnight. I feel great. You know, nothing could be better.
So glad I asked.
I haven't worn pants since Obama was in office. I don't know. Yeah, I think as long as, here's the thing, we need to have nationwide mail-in voting. It's an imperative. It needs to happen. And, you know, we will survive this.
All right. Regardless. That is our Eric Thomas. He's a comedian. He's senior staff writer for Elle.com. His debut memoir is called Here For It, or How to Save Your Soul in America. It's out now. Hey, Eric, you know, every show we ask listeners to share moments of kindness and generosity that they're seeing in their communities every day. So listen to this. Today's story is from Cindy in Spencerport, New York, home of Ricky Freeman, the men's suit designer.
One of their designers reached out to our community to look for home sewers who would be willing to make masks and gowns for our medical community, since their factory, of course, is closed. And he was hoping for a couple dozen, maybe 100, and in the end got responses from over 5,600 people willing to volunteer their time. I just found that so encouraging. And he's setting up the supply chain now so we can hopefully get started soon. Stay safe, everyone.
Well, Eric, we have dark times, but what do you think? That makes me feel pretty good.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, you know, it's beautiful. Ultimately, we are humans, and humans can be good and bad, but I really am so heartened by the number of humans who have positions of power and humans who just have, you know, whatever they can give, their sewing machine, their time, mm-hmm. their listening ear, and the fact that we're all able to give something, and that so many of us are.
And that's why we've been asking so many of you to tell us your moments of kindness in your communities. 855-236-1212. That's our Eric Thomas. This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink. To learn more about Catherine and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. Thanks to Catherine. Thanks to Eric. This program comes to you from WAMU. It's part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.